This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Tonga, the catastrophe in the Pacific, leaving communication cut with Tonga, the main island, and all of the atolls, the sub-islands of the group. Jeremy Zakas is in New South Wales and Sydney, and the Australians are now a major part of these next months for the people of Tonga to get supplies in. There is the complication. Tonga, heretofore, has been a zero COVID zone. So what is to be done? Jeremy, a very good day to you in New South Wales. Australia was a zero COVID zone until you opened up and here comes Omicron. Right now, Tonga's a zero COVID zone, but it seems impractical. What is your expectation? How can you get supplies and help into Tonga when you can't put personnel in there?
G'day, John. Yes, the unexpected outcome of this volcanic eruption there in Tonga is now the potential that Tonga could get COVID. They had been completely free of COVID until now. And Australia, while we are going through an Omicron wave of COVID and we're effectively seeing our peaks, trying to get humanitarian aid to Tonga right now is proving very difficult for us because we don't want to be the country that actually introduces it to Tonga. What we have right now is we do have one of our ships steaming out to Tonga, the HMAS Adelaide, which has bulk water and 40-bed field hospital on board. All the crew have been tested negative for COVID. But in addition to that, we do have humanitarian flights. Now, these are the problem because only just this week alone, one of our humanitarian flights had to turn back because a crew member had tested positive for COVID, but the results only came while the flight was mid-flight. So it shows that we, to our best abilities, trying not to spread COVID into Tonga, it really is going to be almost impossible.
What we know from incomplete reporting is that there's widespread devastation. There's a shortage of food and water, and it's only going to get worse because the crops have been damaged. And it's very far away from anything, especially even Australia and New Zealand. I mean, it's quite isolated. So is this a major story, rescuing Tonga? Are you seeing it on your evening news?
We are. This is definitely a big story for Australia. And I'll tell you the reason why, John, because Tonga is one of those island nations that Australia has had a lot of business with. Effectively, Tonga has also relied on Australia for a lot of support for other disasters in the past. But it's one of those countries that, in some respects, Australia has taken under its wings to help develop. So for us, Tonga is effectively, you know, being decimated. It's like losing a part of Australia. So right now, we're trying to send as much humanitarian aid, as much food, as much water. New Zealand is doing exactly the same too. For this part of the Pacific, really, Tonga is becoming a major focus to try and get back on its feet. But we're very cognizant too that the volcanic eruptions may not be finished. This may not be the end of the story. So while we're trying to send support, trying to send our people over there to assist, there's every chance that they too could be harmed. So in the media, in our news here in Australia, we're seeing it daily, we're seeing it nightly. We are getting the updates because it is actually a concern for the Australian people.
Omicron. When last we talked, it was sweeping through New South Wales. It was in Queensland. Western Australia remains closed, but there were reports of it in Western Australia. What is the date, or is there a date for peak in New South Wales?
Well, John, this is kind of roundabout good news. We think right now, as we speak this weekend, the peak may be here. We may have seen it on Saturday, the 22nd of January. And the peak by Australian definition is the number of cases in hospital has actually hit the highest number it's seen and is starting to go down the other side. Now, today, it now being Sunday, we've seen 20,000 cases in ICU, or it's 20,000 cases in hospital in New South Wales compared to 25,000 yesterday and a trend upwards of in the week prior. But what we've seen is we've seen a definite drop in numbers in New South Wales and Victoria. Now, of course, there will be times when the cases may come up again, but a lot of leading scientists, medical scientists, believe that with the way that Australia has effectively opened itself up, allowed Omicron to go through the community, but also had the high numbers of vaccinations, it may have actually hit the peak now, which I might add, we were talking about this last week, is about a week earlier than we expected. We were thinking it might be next weekend. So, I mean, that's great news for us, John. We might be finally seeing the other side of Omicron.
Part of Omicron here and in Europe is empty shelves because so many people are out. The clerks are out. The associates are out. You've had one particular occupation out, forklift drivers. Now, the Prime Minister got in trouble about forklift drivers. How so, Jeremy?
Yes. To his credit, our Prime Minister, Mr. Scott Morrison, said that, hey, we don't have enough forklift drivers. What about the kids? Okay, so how about the 16-year-olds out there who have their driver's license but technically can't drive a forklift at 18? Let's bring the numbers down to the age of 16. Well, I mean, fantastic idea. And you could just see the children around our nation rubbing their hands together in glee. But unfortunately, then common sense came in. The industry, the forklift industry stepped up and said, well, you could get 16-year-olds onto forklifts, but it will take too long to train them. They're also too immature to effectively be moving pallets around a yard. Chances are they'll probably have some kind of accident. Not a good idea. So unfortunately, the National Security Cabinet, during their discussions, decided that kids weren't allowed to drive forklifts. But honestly, John, I think as far as ideas go, this was an absolute cracker.
You've got to move the supplies. You haven't got enough people at the docks. You've got empty stores. Have the shelves changed this last week?
Only very moderately. And when I say very moderately, we effectively get some meat back on the shelf for maybe a couple of days, namely chicken, but then it will go away again. We are starting to get back toilet paper and some of those essential items, but it's in fits and spurts here in New South Wales. Victoria is being hit harder too. Queensland is also being hit harder, where the shelves are genuinely empty. It's just you can't predict what's going to be at the supermarkets on any given day. And the supply shortages are going to continue because of the fact that a lot of these drivers, a lot of the transport workers are the poor buggers on the front line getting Omicron because they are dealing with so many people. And right. We will probably be going through this for a number of weeks still.
It is raining. It's been raining for days and weeks in New South Wales, across southern Australian continent, and then from the tropical storms in the north coming down the eastern shore. Now, gales and typhoons and high waves, that can be positive, but it's summertime. You'd like a little sun. However, there's now one more twist. Cockroaches. Cockroaches. Cockroaches everywhere. Is this an unusual burst of cockroaches because of the rain?
This is highly unusual. Sydney is known as the cockroach capital of Australia, and certainly we do get our fair share, but oh my goodness, I've never seen them like I've seen them now. And we're not talking about little itty-bitty creatures. These are 1 to 2 inches long. These are big black roaches, and it's not just one species. There are several species. And you're right, we have seen rain and pestilence caused by rain, namely the mice. We've had that plague, but now we've got roaches. And there's really not a lot you can do to stop them apart from trying to poison them. But then here's the amazing fact, John. The quicker, as fast as we can get rid of them, as fast as we can poison them, they breed just as quickly. So unfortunately, here in New South Wales, we have to put up with them. But also, too, they're in Western Australia. They're in Darwin. So the west and the north of Australia, where it's highly unusual because the hot weather tends to effectively dry them out and they don't thrive. But with all the added rain and all the added moisture across the country, we've got cockroaches from left to right of the map right now.
I learned from Jeremy that there are 4,000 cockroach types in the world. 4,000. Australia, who knows why, has 500 of them. You have 15% of all the cockroaches types on the planet. Did you know this?
I did not know that until this week when I got a crash course in cockroaches. And the interesting part is the entomologists who study cockroaches for a living say that of those 500, 493 will stay in the bush. Only about 7 will come into our homes, but the 7 that come into, or types that come into our homes, are the larger types. So unfortunately, it's the biggest and the boldest tend to break down the doors and come into our lives. But 500 different species in Australia, who would have read it?
Now, this is an old story, but I never tire of it. The mice are back. Where are they?
Yes, they are. They're not only now in New South Wales, out to the west of Sydney here in rural New South Wales, they're also in Western Australia, which is one of the driest parts of the country. Effectively, it's mostly desert and effectively not very friendly to mice. But with La Nina pushing across those weather systems, the mice are really growing in epic proportions again. And truth be told, too, it looks like Central Australia is not going to escape it, because as the mice grow in Western Australia and New South Wales, they're effectively coming into the central regions too. But the problem here with mice growing in Western Australia, locked down from COVID, not really able to sort of deal with a mice plague because it doesn't have the poison, doesn't have that plan in place to effectively stop them. Whereas here in New South Wales, we've got the government giving $50 million to farmers. We've got all the poisons in the world to try and stop the mice. But Western Australia, John, watch this space. There is definitely a plague of epic proportions there, and we're not going to hear the end of it anytime soon.
Ashes. The ashes tests are done. Australia sweeps. There was a celebration afterwards, similar to what we see after the World Series, where the players come together with their coaches and pour pretty good Australian champagne on their heads. However, your Captain Cummins won the heart of everybody who writes up anything to do with cricket. What did he do before the champagne was poured?
Yes, in this case, it was a Pakistani player there. There's a good Muslim Pakistani player. So effectively what Cummings did was he's very culturally aware. And Cummings, Captain Colgate, while he's a great cricketer, he is also very much a statesman. So effectively he allowed the Pakistani player to enjoy the celebrations, to come in on the celebrations after the Ashes. But he held off until the individual had left before he opened up the champagne. So he's effectively being seen now as, not only one of the better or greatest cricket captains of the Ashes series so far for Australia, but he's being seen as genuinely a nice guy. He's somebody that understands how the world works.
I've watched enough of the video now of the contest. I'm looking forward to seeing a video of a cricket game that isn't so one-sided, because I think that there's a lot of strategy I missed out on, scoring all those runs and who's going to be the batter and how you're going to pitch. It was too one-sided, Jeremy. It's hard to learn from it, because I knew that the English were either incapable of fighting or something was wrong.
And something was wrong. And it's a pity, John, that you actually saw this Ashes series and this was the first one you were exposed to, because normally they're not this one-sided and normally we'd be chatting about tactics and winning styles. But the problem is, and this is only starting to come out now, it looks like the English team, for want of a better word, we knew they weren't there fully, but they were too comfortable. It looks like they were partying a little bit too hard during the Ashes. And when I say partying, it's not so much that they're going out to nightclubs every night, but they did apparently get onto the beverages. They were having alcoholic drinks. They weren't effectively looking after their bodies during the entire Ashes tour, which begs the question, did they take this seriously? And now this is only coming out. This is only the start of the story, John. I think we'll find out exactly what happened in the English camp over the coming weeks about really whether or not, England should have turned up at all.
Jeremy Zakas, he's in New South Wales with the cockroaches, with the mice, with the victorious Australian cricket team led by Captain Cummings. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.